Hey, everybody, this is Stelly Efti.
And this is Heaton Shah.
And in today's episode of the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about different ways for you to increase your customer lifetime value.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit, we got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah. We want you to do your best.
So the idea here is, you have a business, you have a startup, you have customers. Congratulations, right? But a lot of people out there, a lot of businesses out there, the way you start is that, you know, you're trying to build something people care about. You get some, you know, early customers, and then eventually you start figuring out how, you know, you start asking more questions about how healthy is my business model, how much revenue are we really making per customer, and then also how are we going to grow this business. And the answer to how you grow it, what kind of challenge you're going to have to acquire more customers, is strongly influenced and dictated by how much money you're making per customer. Because, you know, the more money you make, the more options you have in how much money you can spend to acquire a customer. So I wanted to just chat with you. You have so much experience. We both have advised, helped, and built so many different businesses and experimented with this a lot. So for people that are out there that are like, you know, I'm making money, but I'm not making that much money per customer, how can I make more money? What are my ways to increase my customer lifetime value? Let's just bang a few of these out there and give people like a framework that they can go through if they are in that spot and they're looking to increase the revenue and profits they make per customer.
Yeah. You know, the truth is, like, there's not that many ways to increase customer lifetime value. And it's really just about breaking down what are the different opportunities that you have in your business. And, you know, we could get into really complex things like change your customer, right?
Yep.
So what I'm curious about, Stelly, is like, what guardrails would you like to put on the discussion on this one?
So let's do this. Let's actually focus on the few basic simple ways that you can do with your installed customer base. And then once we bang through those, we could say, hey, if you think through all these or you've tried all these and you're still not making enough money, then the only alternatives are A, B, and C without going too much detail on how to execute on these things.
Cool. So one way is you get more money from existing customers by selling them something more, right?
Yep.
Another way is you just raise your prices.
Yeah.
Which is a very common piece of advice that almost everybody gives to everybody else in SaaS, especially. And probably in almost any category, because whatever you're charging, you're probably not charging enough, is kind of the thesis. I could argue that point, but like, that is the second way.
Let me stop you right there real quick and let me ask you this question. I think I know the answer, but I still want to ask the question, which is, have you, out of the hundreds or even the thousands of founders that you've ever met, have you ever met a startup where your first piece of advice after talking to them was, whoa, your price is way too high?
It's rare, but it happens.
It happens. I've never had this case before.
Yeah. Maybe I've had it once or twice because someone's just being ridiculous, right? They're like, oh, I think small, medium businesses are going to pay me $2,000 a month. Actually, wait, hold on. What do they pay for every day, you know, and every month? And can they even afford that? And how important is what you're doing? So I literally, that was the exact discussion. Okay. That was probably only once. But yes, you're correct. I think most people do not charge enough. So one of the easiest ways is just think through what you're charging and see if there are any experiments, any tests you can run to increase the price and see what happens. This is actually one of the reasons I love sales, especially early days of sales when you're actually doing inside sales or even outbound or whatever process you have, because you can, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you are the expert here, but you can easily just talk to somebody and charge every person you talk to more and more money, or say that you were going to charge them more and more money, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the easiest ways to figure out a price point, which is you want some people to say no, but you want most people to say yes. If nobody's saying no to your price, you're probably charging too little. And there's probably some signals that you can get easily. You know, the most common conversation I've actually had around pricing, in person especially, is like, oh, I told them that price and I wish I would have charged more. Because they told me that's cheap. and I want to give you one quick tip on this before we continue, which is, it is your fault if you're charging them too little and you could have known that you could have charged them more.
Yeah.
It means you didn't do your homework to figure out what they were willing to pay based on what they're already paying for. So a better way to approach it would be, if you're replacing something they're using, ask them how much they pay for it. If you're replacing something they're using and you know what it is, go to get on a sales call, get on a demo, go do that thing with that company that you are replacing and go understand what their pricing model looks like if it is not on a website. You should do that anyways for a whole bunch of reasons, but that's key because you should know what your customer is paying for before you even talk to them and how much they're paying, ideally. If you don't know, then that can be one of the first things you go after in your conversation with them. And you should. I have never seen a place where the customer will not tell you what else they are paying for. I don't know if you have.
No. A lot of times people never ask the question because they assume the customer would never tell them. You'd be surprised what people will tell you just if you ask them, right?
Everyone will tell you. I've never had an instance where they won't tell you what they're paying for and how much because what's it to them? It's another software they use, right? Like it's nothing to them, you know, and you could find out yourself, but it's nice to know what that specific company's paying, why they love it and what they're paying for. And a lot of times founders are just scared of competition, right? And embracing it is important. And so that is your probably biggest way to increase your lifetime value and how much you charge just by understanding what they're paying for and where you should set your pricing based on that.
I love that. And we talked about it in a prior episode on like how to cultivate a bias towards action. It's funny, I had a conversation just recently with a founder where they told me they had doubled their price monthly and it made no difference in their conversion rate. That like basically a SaaS product that got a good amount of traffic and people would just like upgrade themselves. And they were like, well, we were debating this for 6 months and we doubled the price recently. And wow, we would be so surprised that it made no difference to our conversion rate. So we think that was a really good step. And then I asked them because the price still seemed very cheap to me. I went, how did you decide for this price? And they're like, I don't know. It just seemed like doubling would be the most aggressive thing we can do. I'm like, okay.
Ooh, so aggressive. Right? I like it. That's a good word in pricing.
Yeah. So I asked them, okay, so you doubled and it made no difference. When are you going to double again? When are you going to, like, you need to push to see where is the ceiling here, right? And yeah, they totally looked at me and they were like, oh, shit. Mm. Huh.
Missed opportunity.
And I'm like, are you guys nuts? Like you doubled and it made no difference. And you're just like,
Double again.
Yeah, yeah. They were just totally content and happy that happened. They're like, oh my God, it didn't change anything. Well, then we need to double. I'm like, the goal is to get to a point where it starts making a negative impact. Then you know that's our ceiling, right? And you can go down from there. But until you get there, why are you stopping? And they're like, oh yeah, okay. Yeah, we should do this. We should probably do this in like a few months. I'm like, what few months? Today? Can we just change the pricing right now? Like, what's stopping you from doing this? And they could not come up with a single thing that would stop them from changing the price again, other than their own psychological barriers, right? So it's funny to see a founder or founders that increase the price and are surprised that it didn't really affect the conversion rates. But then it's baffling or heartbreaking to a certain degree that didn't prompt them to think we need to do this more until we really know, you know, what the ideal pricing is here.
I love it. Love it.
So we talked about upselling, selling the existing customers more stuff. We talked about increasing pricing for the stuff you're already selling them, right? Whatever the plans are, the features, the products, whatever it is, just charge more. And then the third thing I think is, at least if it's a subscription product, is keeping your customers longer around or making them use your product more so that,
lower your churn.
Lower your churn, improve your retention, and improve whatever you want to call that, like the usage within the organization. If your pricing is based on some kind of number of seats or number of people that access the system.
Yeah.
So those are really the three, if you want to increase your customer lifetime value, those are the three things you can do if you don't change who your customer is or what you do fundamentally as a business, right?
And I don't think we've done an episode on reducing churn or increasing retention and all that. So I like so badly want to dig into that right now, but like, let's save it because I think that's a topic in itself, right?
Let's definitely talk about that. More for sure. So it seems like you already hinted at this, but I want to highlight it so it's beyond any kind of interpretation. If I'm a founder, I have a product and I'm asking myself, well, I'm thinking I need to make more money per customer. I need to increase my CLTV, my customer lifetime value. We gave people three options: upsell them more stuff, increase your current pricing, keep people around for longer, get better retention, lower churn rates. If I look at these three things, there is a priority usually, right? How do I prioritize what I do first or what I try and test first?
Yeah, in most businesses, and again, this is probably why I said this about the third one. In most businesses, at least in my experience, they probably have too much churn. And churn is the hardest thing to resolve, you know, because it's something that naturally happens with your product. It's not like you're in too much control of it most of the time, at least initially. And most companies have way more churn than they know what to do with. And the reason I say that is it's also where there's the sort of worst experience when it comes to lifetime value. It's like basically you put all this effort into acquiring them and eventually they stop using you and they stop paying you, more importantly. So to me, that's usually the first place I would dig in because it's the most challenging. And that's just a generic statement. But usually I see most companies I see that are in SaaS have a churn problem, especially in the earlier stages, pre-Series A, sometimes post-Series A, unfortunately. And companies have gotten really good at acquiring customers. They aren't necessarily the best at keeping them around. And one of the reasons is these days, it's not just a sales problem. It's not just an account management problem. It's also an onboarding and product problem. And onboarding meaning customer success, onboarding from a product standpoint, as well as onboarding in terms of, do you know the things that will make a customer successful for the long haul during the first 90 days of them using you? And that question is not very easy for most people to answer. So before you go start digging into, you know, oh, can I charge people more money? Or even can I, you know, sell them more stuff and charge them more for that? Or can I get more users? Really dig into your churn and make sure that the churn isn't killing you. You know, and what I mean by that is some companies have 1-2% churn. That's very rare. Most companies, and I mean on a monthly basis, you know, and most companies have a usual like 5-7% churn rate month over month, especially initially before they started working on that. And getting that down to 2-3%, getting it down to what a lot of people call negative churn is really important. And just to give a quick primer on negative churn, just because I said it, I guess, negative churn means that you are getting more of your existing customers to pay you more money than the people who are leaving you and what that costs you. So if the people that are still with you pay you more money every month, like if, you know, you have people paying you, you know, they're on, let's say you're making $1,000 a month, just to very, very simplify it across your customer base, and you're losing 100, that 1,000, you're losing 100, that turns into 900, that would be $100 of churn, which is like 10% churn. But if you were making another 100 on that or more, that would be put you into the sort of negative churn territory, which means that you are making more money than you are losing every month from your churn by the existing people who are willing to pay you more money. And that kind of goes back into area 1 and 2, right? And so honestly, these three things are related because of the way you can calculate them. I honestly would have to be straight up about this. I used to hate people talking about negative churn. Because it was like, it was a made up metric initially just to help people feel better about their churn, in my opinion. Lately, I've been coming around to it simply because you don't really have a healthy business unless everyone who pays you has some opportunities to pay you more money over time. So that goes to my second one. So to me, the prioritization is really look at your churn, make sure there's no issues there that are low hanging or that you're not digging into. Then look at how you can get existing customers to pay you more money. And then sort of focus on increasing your prices. The reason I say that is because early on, increasing your prices is the easy thing, and many people would have done that. And so that probably is the first thing you already can think of and you get advice on. But it's really quickly, that becomes the last thing you should focus on, and churn becomes more important. And then getting upsells over time become important, because as you dig into churn, you realize how the upsells can help you. So that's my sort of long-winded way to think about it, I guess.
I love it. I love it. Especially because, you know, it's the counterintuitive way, as you said, that most people will go about this. But the problem is, like, if you have a churn issue and the first thing you do is increase prices to make more money, it's going to just accelerate your churn issue.
You still have a churn issue.
Yeah. No, it's probably going to get worse even, because now people were telling you they're not getting enough value out of your product. That's why they're leaving. Now you're charging them more money. So they're going to be leaving at faster rates, right? So now you're making this, short term it might look like you've improved something, but long term you're going to make it much more difficult for you to figure things out. So I love the direction of this. All right, so very quickly before we wrap this episode up, let's say you do all the right things, you go through all the right steps, and it's still not getting you to the numbers you want. Or let's say you just look at your customer base and you do a bunch of math and you think you're convinced, you know what, no matter what the fuck I do, these people just don't have that much money. So I'm not going to be able to make enough money on them to be able to grow the business as much as I want, or to be able to use the channels that I want. The only two big ways, if you're at that point, is to change your customer base. But changing your customer base can be such a fundamental thing that it also means that you might have to change significantly what your product looks like, or even just completely build something new, something completely new to serve that totally new customer base, right?
Yeah, totally.
But we'll leave that off for another episode. So if you guys out there are in that spot and you're like, no, tell me more. That is my problem. Please.
We will talk about
that. Chat about that. We will. And you can always tweet us at Stelly on Twitter or at HNChar for Heaton on Twitter and let us know. Please talk about this. And the more we hear that, the more it's going to prompt this episode up in the letter. But for today, I think that's it from us for kind of the three straightforward ways for people to increase their customer lifetime value.
See ya.
See ya.